Welcome to Feed Your Dog Facts, the internet's number one resource for fighting pet food industry misinformation and promoting evidence-based pet care. Now, here are your hosts, Daniel Shuloff and Alexis Malone.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Feed Your Dog Facts. Happy Friday. We are here today to talk about ingredient splitting, and I am so excited to dive into this topic. You'll be hearing from me. I'm your host. My name is Alexis Malone, alongside Dan Shuloff, who is the founder and CEO of Keto Natural Pet Foods. He's also written a book, Dogs, Dog Food, and Dogma. So Dan, can we start with just the most simple version? What is ingredient splitting? What am I seeing all over these comment boards and on different pet food brands?
So ingredient splitting is a marketing strategy. It's a way of labeling your pet food product. And so more specifically, it's a strategy in how you list the ingredients of the product. So one of the things that you have to do, if you sell pet food in the United States, you have to tell the consumer what the ingredients are. And ingredient splitting is a way of listing your ingredients to sort of deceive the consumer into thinking something about the product that isn't necessarily true.
Okay, so this kind of came to be because pet food owners feel like, hey, what's going on here? I'm seeing all of these, the same thing kind of broken up into different pieces, essentially, correct?
Yeah, so ingredient splitting in general, the practice has arose and become common, and it is common in the pet food industry, because there are a few like overlapping realities that all kind of come together to create this weird thing. So one of the realities of the pet food industry is that you're not required to disclose the carbohydrate content of your products.
Which has changed, correct?
Yeah, it's supposedly the governing body, the organization that matters, has officially changed these rules. It's going to take a period of time before they start enforcing them. But as we record this in late 2023, it's still the case that manufacturers are not required to disclose the carbohydrate content of their products. Okay. It's also the case that consumers generally are aware, even if you don't have like a PhD in nutrition, that number one, dogs and cats need a lot of protein and fat in their diet, and that animal products typically contain only fat and protein, whereas agricultural products, starches and fruits and vegetables, typically contain primarily carbohydrate. Okay. So because those things all exist side by side, it became the case early enough in the development of the pet food industry that many consumers would approach the decision of what to feed their dog, what product to choose, by looking at the ingredient list. And they do that in part because the nutritional content, the direct statements of nutritional content, this percentage protein, fat, carbohydrate, is faulty. Like I said, it doesn't include a requirement about carbohydrate. So if you want to know how much carbohydrate is in this product, because I generally know my dog needs animal fats and animal proteins, and that's kind of the extent of my general knowledge, you couldn't just look for the numerical statement. You have to look at the ingredient list and go, well, as you're saying this to yourself subconsciously, right? I'm going to look for how many and how prevalent the starch agricultural type ingredients are on the ingredient list and use that as something of a proxy for what the actual percentage of carbohydrate is. It is the case that when you list your product's ingredients in the ingredients panel on a label for pet food, you have to list them in descending order of like commonality. So the ingredient that's used the most, that weighs the most in the product has to be first, and then the second most, second, all the way down until you get to the one that has the smallest amount in the product. And so the practice that many consumers fell into was a common enough way of approaching this was, how close to the top of the list are my carbohydrate ingredients? So if my product has corn as the number one ingredient, it stands to reason, outside any shenanigans, that this is a very carbohydrate-rich product. We know it has more carbohydrate than any other ingredient in there, more corn than any other ingredient. And so that sort of strategy for roughly approximating, is this a healthy thing for my dog or not, became somewhat pervasive because of those regulatory realities and that rough consumer understanding. But then, as tends to happen, as soon as a consumer practice evolves and consumers like figure out a way to sort of work around the limitations of the regulatory world, it's like, well, they won't tell me how much carbohydrate is in here directly, so I'm going to come up with this other way to sort of approximate it. Once that becomes common enough, well, then the brands figure out a way to like work around that and come up with tricks to hide that ball too. It becomes common enough that they know they're going to have to deal with it. And so that ingredient splitting is, in a general sense, like the term used to describe the strategies that folks use to get around that consumer behavior, get around that consumer understanding.
So typically, obviously, a negative connotation when we talk about ingredient splitting, as a pet food consumer, you feel deceived. You feel like, wait a second, why am I seeing chicken, chicken liver, chicken meal? And now you have ingredients that maybe you don't want at the front of your list kind of pushed down further. So right. It's something right. That I feel like, okay, this is something that we should be aware of. And as far as like how you can go about ingredient splitting, you mentioned
different buckets. There's different versions. You know what I mean? You have examples, right?
I do. Yes. I pulled a few. Examples.
Because it's important to like, well, look, let's go through the examples first. All right, what we have here on the screen, if you're watching this on video, you can see it. If you're just listening, I'll do my best to describe it. We have the ingredient list and other label information for a Taste of the Wild product, Sierra Mountain Kibble from Taste of the Wild. Okay. And what we have here is the list of ingredients from the most common to the least common. And it starts off with lamb meal, and then goes sweet potatoes, egg product, lentils, garbanzo beans, peas, pea flour, and then goes into even others. Okay. The nutritional analysis for this product is, if I recall correctly, a 25% protein and about 40% carbohydrate on a dry matter basis. So, oh no, excuse me, on an as-fed basis that has the moisture in it. And so, if it's a quarter protein and 40% carbohydrate, a reasonable consumer would expect to see some carbohydrate as the first ingredient. That's what makes up most of the product nutritionally. Shouldn't we see that kind of ingredient at the top? But are you able to pull that screen back up? It's not at the top. We have lamb and lamb meal at the top. Okay, so how can that be the case? How can those things? Well, the answer is they don't just use carbohydrate from one ingredient. They use multiple ingredients to provide that total carbohydrate content, but each individual one is in a small enough, there's like a small enough quantity of it in there that it doesn't jump ahead of the meat ingredients. Only when you aggregate them all together does the nutritional content jump ahead of the nutritional content of the animal ingredients, if that makes sense. So here we have sweet potato, lentils, garbanzo beans, peas, and pea flour, all of which are like starch-based ingredients. There's some amount of protein and fat in them, but they're primarily starches. And they're why the product is 40% carbohydrate. But because they've split, instead of just using sweet potatoes, if this product didn't use lentils, garbanzos, peas, pea flour, and just use sweet potatoes, the ingredient list would go sweet potatoes, lamb meal, and it would have a totally different vibe to it. But instead, we split the ingredients into split the starch ingredient into many starch ingredients, and it bumps them all down the list.
Okay, so the other thing I wanted to ask you about is on this Taste of the Wild, you see that the first two ingredients are lamb and lamb meal. Can you kind of tell me a little bit, like, I understand the carbohydrates, but is that considered splitting?
Remember how I just generally described, like, as in my judgment, the basic exercise is trying to make it look like it's primarily animal ingredients and to a lesser extent, agricultural ingredients. And so one of the ways that you can split up ingredients to make, to reach that goal, is to take your big source of carbohydrates, your big agricultural thing, and split it into a bunch of them so that they all go down further down the list, right? The other way is you can split up your protein, your animal content, in such a way that it makes it feel even more prevalent in the product than it really is. And so I think we have another example dealing with that. And it's basically what you're alluding to. When you saw the lamb and lamb meal at the top, you have two ingredients that are found, the number one and number two ingredients on the list. And so, yeah, all right, now we've got a Stella and Chewy's product. Looks like it's called Chewy's Chicken. And the we've got the ingredient list pulled up. The first three ingredients, chicken with ground bone, chicken liver, chicken gizzard. So what you have there is this vibe of the first three ingredients are all different animals ingredients. And it's like, oh, wow, that's very meaty. Not only is chicken the most common ingredient in there, but there's more of three different kinds of animal ingredients than there is any agriculture, commodity, crop type ingredient. But really what's happened here, I mean, you only have one animal in there, and it would be equally accurate from a regulatory perspective to just make this ingredient list say, ingredient number one, chicken, and then number two, whatever the first one after the various chicken ingredients is here, pumpkin seed, organic cranberries. They've split what could be listed as one ingredient into three by just referring to the different parts of the chicken there. And so it, instead of just having chicken at the top of the ingredient list, which is like good, a consumer, plenty of consumers will take that as, oh, that's a very good quality because that means there's, it's mostly a meaty thing. Well, now we're going to go even further, kind of double down on it. We're going to split that chicken into three different kinds of chicken so that I've got three different animal ingredients at the top of my list before we even get into starch content. So you can see it's like accomplishes the same purpose of like overall making the product feel more meaty and less crop-y, but in a very different way. We're not splitting up the crop ingredients, we're splitting up the animal ingredients.
I'm going to make that a little slogan.
Crop-y?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I have to say that when I was trying to find examples, it was extremely difficult for me to find examples of the protein itself getting split. Like I saw quite a few examples of, okay, this is lamb and now we have lamb meal. That seems to be much more common than chicken, chicken thigh, chicken liver. Why is that the case?
Okay, so even with, and we've talked about two different varieties of ingredient splitting, right? The like crappie one, and then the animal ingredients one. And then within each of those buckets, you can, there's kind of two different flavors there. One is you can take a single ingredient and split it into variety of ingredients because that one thing can be broken. It can be described also as multiple parts. So that's like what we saw on the Stella and Chewy's example that we looked at there. It's just chicken, but we're going to list it as chicken without bones, chicken gizzard, and chicken liver, I think. Okay. And you can do the same thing with crop ingredients. Okay. It's like corn and peas in this day and age are processed from that one thing into dozens of different derivative products, some of which would be accurately called byproducts, others not. But it's like the list of corn derivatives is so long, it would like take up a whole book that gets broken out into all kinds of different parts. And so you can just as fairly describe it as corn or as these 10 different constituent parts. Okay. So that type of like going from one ingredient to many is one way of doing this ingredient splitting, and it applies to either one of the two versions we described. The other way to do it is if one ingredient could be used to supply the nutritional content that you're looking for, you can, rather than just splitting that one ingredient into its own constituent parts, you can replace it with six different ingredients that collectively have the same nutritional content. So if you were trying to, for instance, if you say you're selling a 50% carbohydrate product, okay, if you were to get all that carbohydrate from corn, corn's going to be your number one ingredient, okay? Let's say you're not going to go about splitting it into like corn paste and corn, I don't even know the names of these various things, but like all these derivative products. Instead, you're just going to replace that one corn ingredient with a bunch of different sources of starch. So instead of just corn, it would be corn, sweet potatoes, peas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And collectively, the nutritional content would be the same as a 50% corn diet, but it's spread out across different ingredients. So like the one version is like taking a single ingredient and literally breaking it into its own constituent parts. And then the other version is replacing that one ingredient with a bunch of different ingredients, different animals, different plants, whatever, that collectively have the same nutritional content. And either one is like, you take out a single thing and you replace it with a half dozen of them. And so it moves everything around on the ingredient list pretty significantly. It's easier to do the second one of those than the first one. Like, food technology is such that some things are at an industrial scale, like broken apart into byproducts all the time. And so you highlighted some of them, like very common livestock animals, like chicken. Chicken is, you can purchase from any number of vendors, different derivative parts, chicken gizzard, chicken meal, chicken bones, like all that stuff. And it all has individual technical definitions and the relevant like regulatory. But a lot of things, it's not like that. You can't do the same thing for like bison. So you're not going to find somebody that's going to sell you like bison liver and bison meat. Like all that stuff is just harder to acquire in the market. And so it's an easier process to basically be like, let's replace the one ingredient with a whole bunch of them. And it's particularly the case on the carbohydrate side. Like there are more like carbohydrate crappie ingredients than there are animal ones. And so what you'll see, I think one of the most common strategies for like using ingredient splitting to mislead consumers is to, instead of using a single source of carbohydrate in your recipe, to use a half dozen of them different products that each are like from a different plant, like lentils and sweet potato and corn, that kind of thing. And it moves them all down the list and gives you the sense that it's not as carbohydrate rich as it really is.
And so we saw with the Taste of the Wild here, kind of like bringing it back to the lamb meal, and then you go into the sweet potatoes, the lentils, garbanzo beans, pea flour, just like you were describing. If I'm reading this, then my brain goes to, okay, so there's X amount of different carbohydrates in this product. And there's now, because they've split those ingredients, they're further down the list, whereas now they can bring the lamb and the lamb meal up to the top.
That's right.
Okay, great. And then we have one final example as well. And I think it does a really nice job of combining
the two. Yeah, it's kind of like these guys are like the kings of ingredient splitting. Like this example will show you multiple varieties of what I've just described and also like an explicit example of how to market it. So
title to hold, I don't think. What's that? I said king of ingredient splitting is not a great title.
I mean, Brandon enjoys a really good reputation. And right. So it's like if you were to ask them, they would of course highlight a different justification for what is clearly ingredient splitting. They would say, well, no, we're not doing this to mislead the consumer at all. We're doing it because we know that this is exactly the nutritional content we want to put into our diet, that there's a difference nutritionally between red lentils and green lentils or something to that effect. And I submit to you that that's not a very persuasive justification to me.
Brand we have is Origin, which we actually did two Fridays ago, our episode on Origin. And so if you're interested in learning a little bit more about the mislabeling that we kind of dove into on their labeling, that's another episode that we have out now. So you guys can enjoy that. But I'll go ahead and pop up Origin on the screen here.
So Origin Original, this is their like kind of flagship product, the least expensive of their kibble products for this line. And it's like, nothing is simple in this world. It's like, this is before I founded Keto Natural, this is the product that I fed to my dogs. And despite the fact that I was aware of ingredient splitting as a concept and the fact that it seems to be a pretty pronounced case of it here, it's still, because of how I approached what I thought about as healthy, still what I chose for my dog. So it's like important to recognize that it's like, it's kind of a miss. It's not what you would call like a consumer friendly practice, but it's not necessarily so bad that it would make it a less optimal choice than something else. So the king of ingredient splitting. So why? Well, because they do it with like hyper precision in a way that has a terrific like take-home effect. So you can see here, if you're looking at the video version of this, that the first, I don't know, 10 ingredients are all different meats. It goes like this: chicken, turkey, salmon, whole herring, chicken liver, dehydrated chicken, dehydrated turkey, dehydrated chicken liver, dehydrated egg, dehydrated sardine, chicken fat. And then we start getting into the carbohydrate ingredients. And then there we get that version of ingredient splitting: whole red lentils, whole pinto beans, whole navy beans, whole green lentils, whole chickpeas, whole peas. Further down the list, apple pomace, whole pumpkin, whole butternut squash, collard greens, whole apples, whole pears, whole cranberries, kelp. So you get both flavors of ingredients. Then you get taking what could be a nutritional profile that could be provided from a single source of meat, or at least a couple, split into whatever it was, 9 different meats or something like that, but done with such precision that they're the first 9 ingredients on the list. Then you get taking what could, the carbohydrate side of the recipe that could be just reduced to 1 or 2 ingredients, split into even more than 9 or 10, such that it winds up occupying a great chunk of the ingredient list, of course, but further down, all these, if you're reading from the top, you get through all these animal ingredients before you get into any of the crappy ones. Could you pull it back up for just 1 second there so I can look at the guaranteed analysis?
Yeah, I also have just a quick question too. What's with the whole?
I think it's a health halo term is what I would imagine goes into this, that there's nothing that they would be doing inaccurately if they just said herring or apples instead of whole herring and whole apples. I think that it's just a feels whole foods as a in capital letters or non-capital letters are both like a term that connotes good health. I think eating whole foods or going to Whole Foods at the store, both those feel very healthy. And so,
yeah, I'm guilty of that one. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off.
That's okay. So this is like cut in such a way that we can't really see the total carbohydrate content. It's something like 25% on a as-fed basis, I think.
Now we can see your face close to the screen. But I mean, the reason that, not to get too sidetracked, but the reason that this was a brand that you fed and myself as well is because the carbohydrate content compared to other brands is
quite low.
Low.
Yeah. It is. And I guess at the end of the day, that to me is more important than, okay, did they structure these ingredients in a way that feels deceptive? And is that just signifies something about the company? So yeah, you're right. But it's also significant to this like episode, to this explanation, because what you can see if you look at the ingredient list is it's something like 25% digestible carbohydrate and 38% protein. Okay. So there's more protein in there than there is digestible carbohydrate. But I wager that if you give this ingredient list to 100 consumers and say, I'm not going to give you the nutritional content here, you tell me what you think it is. And if they see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 animal ingredients before we even start getting into starches, I would submit to you that people are going to take away, this is even more protein and fat than what's actually in there. That you would say, again, this hasn't been done. This is just me speculating. But I would think that people would say, oh, this, there's hardly any starch in here. There's less, we don't even get there until we've gone through 10 different animal ingredients. And it's like, no, there is more protein than carbohydrate in here, but not by 2 to 1, like less than that. Like it's still quite carby. So the take home, it's like, again, that's why they're the kings of this, is that they do it really well. They do it pervasively. And like in the, maybe pull up the example one more time, they explicitly call out in their marketing on the bag, first X number of ingredients are all animal or something like that, which shows you that they understand that this way of structuring your product ingredient wise is marketable. That's why they're calling it out directly, because they believe it's something that consumers place value on. And so, yeah, it's kind of an admission of sorts. So those are our examples. I think that's all we got, right?
Yes, yes.
So the take home, I mean, I think hopefully everybody that's listening has at least a basic familiarity with what this concept is, where you can encounter it, and you're armed with enough information to apply that stuff however you want in your own shopping. But I think the take home message that even more important than that is that this wouldn't be a common practice, and it wouldn't be something that podcasters are developing episodes about to warn consumers about if it weren't for the fact that there's a more fundamental behavior that's kind of off, in my judgment. My judgment, if you're thinking about what pet food am I going to feed, and you get to the issue that for most of us is the most important issue, which is how healthy is this product? Right now, in this day and age, that gets expressed as people looking at the ingredients list. They go, I got to figure out how healthy this is. You're going to do some kind of like, oh, the brand feels healthy to me. These are some of the claims they make. But when I go to like flip the bag over and do my analysis, I'm going to go to the ingredient list and I'm going to use some inferences about what I see there to like suggest whether it's healthy or not. And this whole ingredient splitting discussion is a product of the fact that that's how people tend to look at things. I think that that whole process is flawed, and it's not anybody's fault except for the regulators. And it's like, if regulators put more clear nutritional content information, if they required that the nutritional content be described in a way similar to the way human use food products provide nutritional profiles, that wouldn't be the ingredient list. It would not be the first place you would look. You would look at the nutrition box first, because that's like, ingredients are relevant only to health, only to the extent that they're relevant to nutritional content. That's what makes them healthy or not, what their nutritional content is. And so you're
drill that into people's head. I love that quote. Every time you say it, I just like, it's so important to say again, please. Yeah.
ingredient content is relevant to health only to the extent that it's relevant to nutritional content. There's no like magic. You know what I mean? It's like, you can explain why or why an ingredient is healthy or not healthy by reducing it to nutritional terms, or else you're essentially saying, I can't understand it. Nobody else understands it, but I think it anyway, that's a good indication that you might not be thinking it all the way through. There are other reasons besides health to like one ingredient or another. They kind of generally fall under the like ethics like header. You say the way that the animals are treated in the making of this ingredient isn't something I like, or this isn't a sustainable ingredient to use, that it's fine now, but it's destroying the environment. These are reasons you might want to not use a specific ingredient. But if you're looking at it from a health perspective, you should be thinking about the nutritional content first, and maybe secondarily the ingredient content. But we don't do that, because for the moment, the nutritional content is a convoluted mess on pet food labels. And so what I would say, the most important take home, if from my perspective, is try to get in the habit of looking at the nutritional content, what's called the guaranteed analysis panel, and the supplemental information that's included with it, and using that as the basis of your thinking about whether a product is healthy or not.
As a dog trainer, one of the golden rules is that you never give unsolicited advice to somebody's dog who might be misbehaving. And so when I see these comments on all of the boards and when people reach out to different pet foods, it's something that you want to respond and say, maybe this is the wrong thing to be focusing on. It's not a bad thing to know about and to make sure that we're holding different companies accountable or calling them out specifically when they go through such a lengthy process of splitting one chicken into 10 different ingredients or one carbohydrate source into 10 different. And so it's definitely something to be aware of, but if only maybe one day the focus will shift to, and as we touched on earlier in the episode, the label regulations are changing to some.
Yeah, it's gotten better. It's like the dominoes have started to fall over. Like for the moment, if you're listening to this episode on the day we publish it and you go out after you're done with it and go to Petco and go buy a bag of pet food, you're not going to see, you're still going to see the guaranteed analysis panel that you've gotten used to. But at some period of time, I can't speak to whether it's months or years from now, that won't be the case anymore. You'll start getting something that's the pet nutrition facts panel that's already been fully adopted and vetted, and we're finally there. And I mean, finally, like it's taken decades to go from guaranteed analysis panel to this, but it's finally there. It's just a question of how long it's going to be implemented. But once it is, I do think that we'll see an improvement, kind of like a more evidence-based approach to analyzing pet food products for health by consumers.
And so my last question is, if ingredient splitting works, which it clearly must to some degree, otherwise companies would not be doing it, why do some brands utilize it to such a degree, such as Origin, and others don't?
I can speak to it from Keto Naturals' perspective, because if you look at our, like we do not have ingredient splitting going on to any extent on ours, but it's not like I was approached that decision from a perspective of like, we want to make sure that we are going to be the paragon of integrity and straightforwardness. And so like, it's sort of like the issue you were just describing it. Like you see other people talking about this issue and you think to yourself, I can try to like add to this discussion, but do it in a way where I also highlight that maybe this isn't where you should be focused at all. And it's like, that's not why we like don't have ingredient, why our label goes like chicken fat, peas. It's like, it's because we were too naive, honestly. It's like, I understand nutritional stuff very well. Marketing and atmospherics and branding, much less so. And so it was pure naivety for us. I think there are probably some brands that think to themselves, are the consumers we already have or the ones we want, are people that already know about ingredient splitting as a strategy and they'll recognize it as a bad practice if we do it. And so we're just going to avoid it altogether. But I would say that other than that, it's naivety, because it's like, if you can get away with not doing it, or if you can get away with doing it, excuse me, there's not a great deal of incentive not to.
Yeah. Yeah. Or on the flip side too, you could have consumers they just don't necessarily care. So why go through the effort to some degree?
That's what, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are costs associated with it. You know what I mean? Like you get, if you are purchasing ingredients in larger quantities, they cost somewhat less than if you're buying them in smaller quantities. And so if you're splitting them up into 100 different ingredients, uh-huh, in smaller quantities. And so there's some disincentive to do it, but it's pretty minor compared to the potential. Like this is we're doing a podcast episode about this. Everybody else that claims to be adding value to how people think about pet food has done their own analysis of this topic too. It's pervasive and it's well understood. So
yeah, cost is something I didn't think about though until you just mentioned it. So that's an interesting point as well. So, okay, well, we touched on the what, why, how you go about ingredient splitting, who's doing it. Any other comments that you would like to add as kind of our wrap up here?
Yeah, just for the third time, underscore the like, this is how it works. But if you're spending too much time thinking about it, you're not thinking about what can really move the needle in terms of your dog's health, which is the nutritional content.
Excellent. Well, you'll see those who are listening and who have stuck with us thus far will be at our pet food stores reading the back of labels. So that's where I foresee.
Very exciting.
This going is trying to identify some examples on our own. And if you do find any examples, feel free to reach out to us at Feed Your Dog Facts. Daniel Shuloff, such a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you all for listening, for tuning in. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yep. Have a good weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.